Blog Talk Radio.
And this is Strategies of Success. And you know, when you're out there and you're trying to achieve a goal, you know that it begins with you. We also know that sometimes we need help. Sometimes we need somebody to confer with. And sometimes we really need to be by ourselves to really take a look at ourselves and to see what it is that we are doing to make sure that we are on that correct path. To make sure that we are going after a business, a lifestyle, or just a way of being that is very consistent with who we are as a person. Because once we do that, then it becomes very easy to explain to others what we are doing. And the reason is because it is completely open to everybody. They see it. They see it in the way that you carry yourself. They see it in every post that you make on social media. And they see it in the way that you interact with others. And that's really important. How you interact with others tells more of a story as to who you are than if you are actually telling somebody what it is that you are doing. Our guest today is Keith Richard Godwin. Keith Richard Godwin became licensed as a CASAC, C-A-S-A-C. There's a reason why he did that. There's also a reason why he got on a comedy stage. There's a reason why he is doing everything in his life. And what he is doing now, everybody could clearly see what he is doing right now, is helping people that are in recovery and helping people get into recovery. And he does that in a number of different ways, but it is only one message that is out there that can explain Keith, and that is that he is out there to help those that are ready to be helped. And Keith, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to join us and to explain this. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is Keith Richard Godwin. And can you start with the CASAC license? What exactly is that, and what led you to getting that designation?
Thank you, Brian. Very kind words. It was funny, as you were talking in the beginning, you're like, you know, people need help, and there's help out there, and you got to reach out to people. And I was thinking, wow, that's what, you know, like, you know, this helped for me. And that's how I got to where I am, because I needed help. And I did reach out to other people, and other people gave me the help I need. So what I'm, you know, so I didn't even realize you were talking about me for other people. I was thinking of it as the lines of like, yeah, I need help. And I continue to need help, and I do reach out to others. And through that process of being humble enough to ask for the help when I need it and to utilize other people's resources and knowledge and information, just like, and that's kind of how me and you became such close friends, because we're from different worlds, but we help each other. And you have different skill sets that I don't have, and I have skill sets you don't have, but we both have big hearts, and we're out to help people and do what we can do. And part of my life has been dealing with drug addiction, and that's why I was a Marine, and I did a little party in the Marines, and before I knew it, just it wasn't fun anymore, and it became a way of life. And for 20 years, I was just using hard and heavy, and I didn't think there was another way to live. I mean, I worked, I was functional for a while. I mean, and you know some of my story, but the listeners might not. I mean, I lost an arm, I was stabbed, I almost died, I was in the hospital, and the only way I got help is I asked for help. And being a veteran, I was able to go into a program and get some help. And, you know, and I stayed clean. And then I went back to school. I got my CASAC to learn about this disease and, you know, what it did to me. And now my purpose in life is to help others with this disease. And I do it with a passion. You know, I don't have kids. I have a lot of free time. So my purpose is to reach out and to let people know that, you know, there is a life beyond drinking and drugs. And everyone makes their own purpose in their own way. Like my sister saves like dogs that are on the Nassau border. Like she'll take them to Canada where there's no kill shelters, and then they'll find them homes and drive them out of there. And that's how she chooses to make a difference, and which is amazing and beautiful. I'm glad she does it. With me, I choose it with drugs and alcohol because that was my journey, and I want people to know I've been there. There is hope. And so that's what kind of took me in this direction.
And I love the fact, and it is obvious for folks that are following you, and it's really important to get your story out there, because the way that you are helping people comes in a variety of different manners. You're with the comedy, the Recovery Comics. You're out there. You're doing the keynote presentations, which is great. And when you're doing that, although you're doing it in a humorous way, sometimes an absolute funny way, but there's a message in there and a serious message. So when you're doing the recovery centers and you're speaking to those folks that are in recovery – you're able to show them that there's a fun way of looking at different things. Not funny, not making fun of anything, but certainly looking at things from a humorous point of view. And it does not lessen the story at all. It does not lessen your effectiveness at all. In some respects, actually, I think it makes it more important, more memorable. Anytime you add humor into a speech, it absolutely is, but more impactful.
Right, and one of the reasons I do that is because I didn't get recovery the first time I went in, and the reason is I stopped using drugs and stopped drinking, but I didn't know how to have fun. I didn't know how to have joy, and I did go back out. I went out for 8 years, and I lost a limb, and I use it, in my joke. People are like, oh, how'd you lose your arm? And I was like, oh, I was in an alligator petting zoo. I'm a chronic nail biter, and people laugh, and it makes them more comfortable around me, and it kind of. Not that what happened to me wasn't serious, because it was serious, but I'm ready to move past it and not have it identify me and hurt me for the rest of my life. So when I say we can laugh about things that are serious, it allows us to move past it and not deal with the hurt. So and I found once I let joy and laughter into my life, I was allowed to heal. And don't get me wrong, there are sometimes I have to dig deep into some serious stuff and do some work on myself and dig into uncomfortable places. But I go there, and then I use humor, when I'm on stage. It's like, because, once you can laugh about stuff and realize the insanity and how crazy we are, it's not minimizing what we did. It's just allowing ourselves to heal from that. And by taking that route, it's opened a lot of other doors for me. Like I said, I do detoxes, rehabs. I do a lot of conventions. I'm traveling all over the United States doing different shows. And the radio show I now do, it's because the lady who runs Just Believe heard about me, and I went down there to do comedy for her facility, and she just believes in what we're doing. She sponsors the radio show, Just Believe, and I've been working with that facility now, getting people help. So by humor, it's actually opened doors for me, and I was able to explain it. So, and my beginning reason for doing it was I needed to laugh to heal. So I want to let everyone else know it's all right to laugh just because we're in a struggle. That doesn't mean we have to be morbid, depressed, and live in guilt, shame, and remorse.
And that also help, but just for the average person who's not ready to get on a comedy stage. But doesn't it even help the regular person that's interested in socializing again and thinking that, I use drugs to be more social with people, to interact with people, and I don't have that crutch? Is that a fair way of saying it? I don't have that crutch anymore. How am I going to do
right.
it? And,
right. Right. Yeah, no, that's true, and it doesn't have to be drugs or alcohol. Some people, especially now with the way technology is, people don't socialize the way they used to. And one of the things that brought me and you together was, you were a senior guy at Toastmasters, and I got in there for a little while just to work on my speaking skills, and it helped me to get connected with a lot of different people. And it's not easy to communicate, and when you go through these things and you realize the fears that people have speaking and communicating, and if they'll say something wrong. And if they won't, and the way society is now with everything with technology, it's like a normal sit-down conversation and talk or looking someone in the eye or the handshake. Everything's an email. Everything's a tweet. Everything's a text. And, it's just the normal stuff does. The going on stage for me was great, but as long as you do something to find joy in your life, whatever gives you joy, it could be your garden or you could do things behind the scene. You don't have to get on stage, but you might want to watch something funny. And whatever it is that drives you is great. Me, I'm a little bit of a showboat. I like to be on stage. It gives me that adrenaline rush. But as long as someone finds something, I think it's important. And that's the message I try to get out there. For everyone, everyone may find something a little different, which is great. And like I'll use you as an example because you have your niche and you have your things you do with Toastmasters and you're really big into it with the speaking and whatever, but you tried comedy. You got on stage. It's like, I'm going to do this thing. You tried mountain climbing and you put yourself out there to try a lot of things, and some of them you continue doing and some of them you're like, no, I tried that and now I could say I experienced it, and you move on to another goal in your life. And that's what it is, to have purpose, to have meaning, to try new things, to live life and not just exist.
Should I translate that? I still do a lot of hiking, but I haven't gotten on a comedy stage in a while.
I heard your hiking is a form. I heard your hiking is a form of comedy, Brian.
Oh, nice. Oh, really nice. And that takes us to the conclusion of today's program. No, not at all. Hey, but it is. not that hiking is my form of comedy, but it is another something that adds to who I am.
Right.
You are getting on stage adds to who you are. It's not just the past. It is the present. So you mentioned about gardening or whatever the hobby is. That then becomes the new you or a new piece of you. And that's really important in that whole transition. I'd love to talk about the radio program that you are doing, and that is on LI News Radio, 103.9.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it's 103.9 Long Island News Radio. I also have a website that I put a direct link because the station's only in Suffolk County and parts of Florida. So if people want to listen, of course they can go to their website. But you can also go right to my website. I have a Listen Live, a link to say Listen Live. It's godwinsrecovery.org. That's G-O-D-W-I-N-S, recovery.org. And I always put a link because people listen all over. And it's just, like I said, I met Cynthia, who's the CEO. She's an amazing woman. She inspired me. And when I met her, I didn't really go there for any other reason, just except to do comedy and maybe give some laughter and talk to her. So we hung out for the whole weekend. She had a house up there where, because they started this new facility in Pennsylvania. So I met her and her staff, and I just really felt her mission and her purpose and the reason and then I did a show for them down there. And so she actually sponsors our radio show. And what we do is I bring other people in recovery on the show, and they share their experience. And they, we've had people who, were homeless, eating out of garbage cans, or prostitutes, or, in the sex industry, or whatever the drugs can take you to, because you do anything to get the next one. And now they're living healthy lives. They're productive. They're doctors. They're nurses. Some of them are CEOs in companies. Some of them are just, holding down regular jobs, enjoying a normal life, or they're on disability, but they don't drink and they don't drug. But whatever their journey is, they don't, their life isn't limited by the use of drugs and alcohol, because that just keeps you in such a bubble of a world. So, and I know that because I've been there. And on the outside, sometimes it looked like I was doing good. I was working as a security guard in a 5-star hotel. I was doing security for Tom Selleck, Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson. So on the outside, everyone's like, "Wow, look at this guy, he's doing great." But on the inside, I was going up to Spanish Harlem. I was doing drugs. I was drinking. I was in that whole promiscuous lifestyle, and I was literally miserable on the inside, but the outside looked like I had it going on. And there's a lot of people that struggle with that, and I hope they listen to this. And if they, but I didn't realize I can have so much more. And I might not have the prestige I had now, but I have more internal stuff that I wouldn't trade for all the money in the world.
Prestige, look at the message that you're delivering. I could ask this question one of two ways, with the fact that you've taken your comedy on a stage to now, and your message on a stage, and at the recovery center has been on radio. So now your reach is over so many different. You can listen online; they can listen anywhere, in the entire world. So from a business standpoint, we could say that's phenomenal. But more important, in your case, that message. So now you are delivering your message instead of a crowd of a couple hundred or a thousand at a convention that you are the MC at or the keynote speaker at. But through the radio, you're helping to deliver the message so much more. And obviously, the guests that are coming on, too, are also reaching out to new audiences. When you're doing the radio program.
Yeah, and they're reaching their friends. Go ahead.
And they're telling their friends.
And so on and so forth. So it's just like it's a viral thing. And when your heart's in something and you believe in it, it's just it takes a life of its own.
Yeah. And personal question: you find it more fun to be on radio and talking to just one or two people that are in the studio, or actually facing 1,000 people?
I wasn't really even into the radio. I just fell into it by accident. And as I've been doing it and I've seen the impact it's had on others, I really started to enjoy it because I see the people's faces light up when they share their story. I hear people who listen who've told me the impact it had on them, and they listen every week now. And, even though I just did it because I thought it was the right thing to do and it was pretty cool, I really, the radio, you know, wasn't my, but I like it now. I love to be on stage. I love to interact with with people, like being there. There's nothing like that for me. The radio is a close second, but to be actually, I did a speaker's engagement in Iowa for mental health professionals, social workers, addiction therapists. And what I did is a little different. They hired me there. They flew me out there. They put me up for the weekend, and they hired me because I was a little different. What I do is I educate because I have the education. I'm a KSAC. I went to school. I have all the education piece. I've been in this field working as an addiction therapist in crisis centers, helping people in placement with veterans. But then I also bring inspiration because I share my own story a little bit. I share of where my struggles were, and I talk about being a Marine, being down in the dumps, my grandmother not even being able to look to me, and now being able to be there for her and be there for my family and be there for others. And then I always interject some humor into it because it kind of keeps it light. And it's like, it's not that serious. We can move past it. We can joke about it because we're not minimizing it. So I use some humorous things just to kind of keep the attention. So I try to when I deliver a message, it's education, inspiration, motivation, and humor.
Right.
And you know what I have found with the humor when we first met and you were talking about this thing in a humorous way, it made it much more comfortable for me to ask you questions about what your experiences were. And, you know, so it does help for other people too, not just those in recovery, but for the family and friends that are in that situation where they do have a loved one, you know, they want to help. So I want to thank you. Personally, I want to thank you because you've allowed me to ask some questions to somebody like you that has the experience, the knowledge base, and the resources to help. So I was able to understand it a lot more and communicate out in my way, you know, to different people. So, Steve, on a personal note, thank you very much.
Yeah, no, and I feel the same way because when I first met you, I was like, I have nothing in common with this guy. He's a business guy, but you just have such a warm, open way about you, and I felt comfortable talking to you, and it was just a trait that you had inept. And me, with what I feel about recovery is I need to let people know where I've been, otherwise they won't know my story. And I'm a 6'6" Marine, so maybe people are a little intimidated coming up to me, and I don't want to offend him. And maybe they're just trying to be polite because, you know, they might want to know things, and they just don't know how to go about it. So I do try to keep an open, friendly style with people because I get rewarded in that process because not only do they get to be comfortable talking to me, I get more comfortable talking to them, and I win. So, you know, that's just my story. Everything I have, I've gotten from others, and I just hold on to a lot of things, yourself included. And I just kind of try to share them with others because there's so many good people in this world. And when we're comfortable in our own skin and we can talk about our own struggles and we can give other people hope, to me, that's my purpose, to give others hope. So they can live a better life. Your quality of life can be better. You can get connected with your higher power, whatever you want to call it, in another way. Maybe you'll get connected with nature. Maybe you'll get more connected with family and friends and loved ones. Or maybe you'll be a perfect stranger. But to kind of, get ourselves out of that little – and a lot of people drink or drug because they're filling a void. And instead of filling that void with alcohol and drugs, which can encompass your whole life and not only your life, your family's life, to be able to get through that and to know that you can laugh, you can joke, you can have a good time. I have a sponsee I work with who said, you know, Keith, the reason I want to work with you is because I just love you. You're not too serious. You've went through a lot, but you just enjoy your life. Every day I see you, you're smiling, you're going out. And I really feel, and I go through my ups and downs, and I have people I talk to, but I really do, I'm filled with a sense of gratitude because I feel like I have a second chance at life, and part of the reason I feel I have that is because I'm meant to let others know that they too, you know, if they make the choice, can come out of that dark place. Whether you're a drug addict or you're just in a depressed place, I work with people in all types of settings. Like I said, I work with veterans who have been in combat. I work with people who are just homeless because of cognitive reasons, and they just got to simplify things for their quality of life to be better. No matter where you're at, I just think people should get, you know, we should instill hope, and that's where I try to look at myself is like, how can I instill hope and meet someone where they're at because someone had to meet me where I was at for me to get the help that I needed.
Right. Well, you do. by the actions that you take, by the things that you do, it definitely does. And by the fact that you got that smile on, you know, just about all the time. And, you know, when you're dealing with somebody that's going through a bad time, you know, they can see that there is hope on the other side. And that it really is an important message to deliver. See, let me ask this from the support staff, you know, the family, the friends who might have somebody that's going through, you know, a bad time, or somebody that is using drugs. What would be the warning signs that a parent would look for if they think that their son or daughter might be using drugs?
Well, you know, there's some warning signs that everyone could notice. I mean, you know, I look for patterns. And when patterns change, there's usually something that changed in that person's life, or they're going through something. So if someone was outgoing and having dinner and all of a sudden they're isolating themselves all the time and they're in their room and they're not coming out, you know, that would kind of worry me. And places that people are at, who you're hanging out with, and, you know, little signs of that, what you're doing. But patterns to me are the big thing. I mean, if some people can get by with good grades, but if your grades are dropping, if you're in school, if you seem to have no motivation, no ambition, you know, like I could tell people in recovery who are doing well, and then all of a sudden they're not. And the only thing I notice is maybe they're outgoing, but maybe they're usually not. So I'll be like, well, what's changed? What, you know, what are you, and, you know, just to kind of bring them back and, you know, to kind of look at that and to address it. And sometimes change is good, but sometimes it's something that needs to be communicated about no matter what, because change is inspired by some action that you're taking. It could be a positive or it could be a negative. So for family members and stuff, you usually know someone in and out. You know their quirks. You know their patterns. And if a lot of that is changing, if they're always broke, if they're always in a crisis, you won't believe what happened. Usually, you know, and some of them can be right, but they'll twist and exaggerate a lot of scenarios. And if you're always in a crisis or you always need, there's a reason why. You're usually not living right or you're doing something. We all have those needs sometimes, but if it's, you know, that person who's always in need, always in a crisis, always running out of gas, always needs a tire, that's a sign to me that something more is going on.
Right. And even if they all of a sudden become much more sociable, animated, that might also be a sign that something's going on.
Exactly, and there's that double life, and you know, maybe alone, because when people are high, they you know, the endorphins are going off, things are being released in their body, and when they're not, then they might sleep for 2 days, and you only see them when they're awake, so you think they're fine, but really they're not. You know, I can't stress enough, communication is the key, and, you know, and try to understand. And even the guy I work with on the radio, Dave, he's just got enlightened, and like yourself also, because he never really knew the addict or met people. And they're like, wow, these are like regular people, good struggle. Some of them are amazing. I can't believe what they're doing. And, you know, and as a person who never struggled with addiction himself, or, you know, as you haven't, you have like a whole new appreciation and empathy for this disease, which it is. When I say it's a disease, and some people think it's a choice. But what we try to do is, if you have this disease, then we try to educate you, so then you realize you do have a choice. You can get help. You can go to programs. You might need to be medically detoxed. You might not just need to work on your social aspects more. It's so multifaceted, this disease of addiction, that there's so many different areas you need to work on, both sometimes medication, sometimes the social aspect, sometimes the networking aspect. There's job things, there's housing things, there's family things. It's intertwined in so many areas of life that, you know, there's no simple, like, here, take this, you have this. For every person, the treatment plan, it has to be individualized.
Yeah. You know, if I had met you at the hotel when you were working there, I just would have thought you had everything together. Yet on the inside, as you mentioned before, you know, you wouldn't. So finding these signs is really or looking for them seems to be like really unbelievably important. And it comes down to the friends and family. And I guess if somebody feels that something's a little bit off, they really should be saying something to somebody. You know? And
yeah,
go ahead. Who do they say to? You know, do you think it's best for them to approach the person directly or see if they can get help first or speak to somebody first before doing something?
Yeah, that's a good question, and there's no right answer. I know for me, the signs were there real early in my life, and that's why I joined the Marine Corps, because I was a train wreck out of high school. I barely graduated, but the signs were all there, you know. But it was just like I thought, you know, people thought I was just a wild kid. But then I joined the Marine Corps, and they told me I had a problem. And when you're around hundreds of thousands of Marines and they say you got a problem, you're really standing out. And then when I got out of the Marines, everyone knew I had a problem except for me. I was they call it the pre-contemplative stage. Everyone thinks there's a problem. Your whole life is in chaos, but you don't acknowledge it as a problem. So I was in pre-contemplative. I didn't think there was a problem. Everyone else had a problem. That's their problem, not mine. I choose to live like this. I have the right to live like this. And that's what then eventually I got desperate. I had to look, well, maybe there's a problem. And I tried to take steps to eliminate it. Maybe I'll just drink and not do drugs. Maybe I'll just do it on the weekend. And whatever way I tried to use, I failed. So then I came into what's called the planning stage, when I'm like, you know what, I got to come up with a plan. I got to do something. My way isn't working. And, you know, you can be in that stage for years, too. And I use the analogy, there's three frogs on the log. One decides to jump off. How many are left? And the answer is three, because he decided to jump off. He didn't jump off yet. So I'll tell people, jump off the log. And then the fourth stage, which is the action stage, is you're doing something. You're getting involved. You're getting help. And then the fifth stage is maintaining it, and that's the stage I'm in. So depending on the person, if a person's pre-contemplated, they have to come to the awareness that they want help. There's really nothing you can do but educate them, unless they're living at your house and you can say, hey, you know what, then an intervention would come and it's like, you know, you need help. You might not realize that we love you, but you can't stay with us because we're enabling your behavior. So, you know, that might be one way, depending. And like I said, every circumstance is different. You know, if someone's in the contemplative stage, I play the tape for them. I was like, you know what, maybe it is, maybe it isn't a problem, but your life, see how much better your life can be without that. And if they're in the planning stage where they want to get help, I can help them get help. I have enough resources. I have enough connections. And if you want help, you tell me you want help, I will get you the help that you need to get you into that action stage when you're actually working. So, you know, it depends where a person's at and what their options are. But if they're self-supporting, they have money, they have their own place, no one can make them stop. It's either they're going to be in a hospital, they're going to be dead, they're going to get injured, they're going to get arrested, or something bad has to happen for them to wake up. So sometimes all the family member can do is pray for them, love them from a distance, and, you know, and you let them know they're there when they're ready.
Yeah, and that's a shame if it has to get to that level, but I guess sometimes it does, you know, for them to hit absolute rock bottom, you know, to make that turn. Keith, we have a couple minutes left. I just want to give out your website. So it would be godwinsrecovery.org. That's GODWINS, recovery.org. And that will give you a link to everything that Keith is doing, including the radio program. You could listen to that online, and I suggest that you do that because he's got some very interesting guests that are there. And a lot of folks are sharing some intimate stories about the process and the changes and the successes that they have seen as they are going through recovery. Keith, last question here. You know, there has been, seems like there's been an unbelievable increase in the use of opioids, as we have been labeling it of late. Do you have any idea why, or your own thoughts as to why it, all of a sudden it increased so much?
I could do a whole show on this topic, but I'll give you this quick snapshot. There was a big pill epidemic going on with painkillers and opiates and OxyContin, and they were trying to, you know, and they put a cutback on the people prescribing them because pharmacies were getting robbed. People were getting killed because they became so addictive. So the suppliers went down. So it's harder to get the pills now. So what people are turning to, and the pills cost too much, like to get a pill, it's $50 to $80. So what people have been doing now is because they're addicted to the pills, and if they stop, they'll get physically ill, and you can even die if you don't get if you don't go to a detox and get withdrawn. So what people are doing is they're turning to heroin because heroin gives them the same effect, and it's cheaper. You can get a bag of heroin for $10. So people have been using heroin in place because they took away the supply of the opiates, but now they didn't put in the things to get the people the help. So a lot of them, you know, now they're sick and they need something. So the epidemic has got even worse because people are now using their illegal stuff. They're buying street Suboxone to try to keep themselves well. And it just kind of keeps them on the hamster wheel. Their intents might be good, but it's not going to help them unless they get the treatment and they need the help. The medication piece is just one piece of the treatment. But then a lot of people are turning to heroin, and it's hard to get a detox because sometimes if you don't have insurance, if you're using, they'll say, oh, well, heroin won't kill you. Maybe the withdrawal from it won't kill you, but it'll feel like you're dying, but people won't want to go through that. So they'll go out and use, and they might get a bad bag or a bad bundle, and they'll be dead. You know, there's things that have been brought into place, the Narcan, and awareness has been made of this. So it's an inside system that needs to be changed, and I'm one of the people that is trying to get with others to make that happen. There's a group called Kings Park, and I know that's a big advocate. Even Congressman Lee Zeldman, his war on drugs thing, I've been getting involved in that, and that's helping too. So there's definitely some things that need to be put into place, but it has gotten a lot worse lately than it was back in the day, because now it's about the heroin. The pills were like nicey-nice because you're getting prescribed by a doctor. Now you're dealing with the street stuff.
Yeah. Hey, Keith, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and certainly we'd love to have you back on to go discuss some of these measures that are being taken to help reduce or even eliminate, you know, the problems that are out there with it. But thank you so much for joining us, getting on stage, getting on radio, and getting on the phone with people, too. It's great what you are doing, and it's totally needed. So thank you.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you, and God bless.
You too, man. You too. All right, I like to end this with three actionable ideas. Here's my three actionable ideas. Number one, go to Keith's website. That's GodwinsRecovery.org. Number two, call your local religious institution, and they are going to have there, or they will know who you can contact if you have any questions about anything that is going on in your life, and that includes the life of your loved ones. The third thing is communication. Boy, that comes up all the time, doesn't it? Communicate. Communicate with those that are around you. If you see something and you feel that it is incorrect, ask questions. Look, ask them, ask somebody, but definitely don't just push it aside. You know, we can make a big difference in everybody's lives if we cared about everybody a little bit more. We should. And when it comes to a loved one, you absolutely should, and go for it. Ask the questions, find out what's going on, find the help that you need, and contact Keith through GodwinsRecovery.org if you have any questions. He is unbelievably accessible and is more than happy to help you in your situation. My name is Brian Cohen. This has been Strategies of Success. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing this with those that are either in recovery or need to be in recovery.